Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
We can just start with the one thing that we can all control is those 3 meals a day that we eat. You know, yes, people fly, and yes, people might drive a car, and maybe not everyone can afford an electric car, or they don't agree that's the right choice. But what the really easy thing we control is what we eat every single day.
I'm Dr. Rupi, and this is the Doctor's Kitchen Podcast, the show about medicine, food, lifestyle, and how you can improve your health today. My guests are Henry Firth and Ian Theasby. Yes, they are the duo that make up Bosch. And you've probably already heard of Bosch because they are the UK's leading vegan influencers. Back in 2016, they posted a video that went viral pretty much overnight. And now 2 billion views later and an average of 26 million views a month, they are the UK's best-selling vegan authors with their latest book, Healthy Vegan, that's also a Sunday Times bestseller. And I'm very privileged to say that I also wrote the foreword for that book as well. They also host the UK's first vegan cookery series on mainstream TV called Living on the Veg. You can catch it on ITV, and I think it's a fantastic show that makes plant-based eating a lot more accessible, and it's something that I wrote about in the foreword too. There's also another connection between me, Henry, and Ian, a mutual friend of ours, Dr. Nish Bedi, who's a urologist, who's also been on the podcast when we talked about eating for your bladder and eating for urological complaints. He actually connected us a number of years ago, and since then we've collaborated on a few projects. I've done a few recipes for them, and I even went through the nutritionals on their first book as well, which I completely forgot about, and we talk about that on the show. This show is a little bit different. We talk about how they got into plant-based eating, what their mission is, and actually how they create culture within their company. And how they get on as a duo, because having co-founders is pretty much like having a marriage, a proper relationship. We touch on a few things with regards to veganism and nutrition, but I think overall you're going to find a different perspective on these two, because after the podcast we were talking, and we talked a bit about how honest this conversation was and just how natural it was too. It's testament to the fact that I just think these guys are doing a fantastic thing, getting more plants on plates, and how they're very relaxed about it as well. I think many people, when they think of veganism, they think it's quite an aggressive sort of community, whereas actually I think they do their community a lot of good, and it's great to have them as spokespeople too. I cook one of their incredible dishes in their latest book. It's a Goan style curry where I use banana blossom for the first time, and I tell you what, making the paste from scratch was such a good idea because it's just a wonderful, flavorful paste. You can check it out on YouTube, and make sure you give this podcast a 5-star review. It really does help spread the message. We read all the comments, and we'll be doing a competition with the comments soon as well. Check out my guests at Bosch. I'll put all the links on the podcast show notes. Make sure you subscribe to this as well. I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to have a great conversation. Sit back, listen, relax, and I really hope you enjoy this chat. So, guys, thank you very much for coming in the kitchen.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Right, it's good to be here.
And you're testing out the new mics for us as well.
Well, they look good.
Thanks.
Yeah. They're very good. Yeah,
that's
they're pretty cool.
That's the main reason why we've got them.
We were just saying they look kind of a bit like an angle poise lamp.
Yes. I remember having those when I was a kid, doing my GCSEs.
It's the Pixar logo, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right. The Pixar one. Yeah, nice. Yeah. It could tell you you're watching movies.
I'll watch it. Well, kids' movies, all standard.
Highbrow. So guys, I'm going to be cooking you a recipe from your book, the one that I did the foreword for.
Yeah.
This one right here.
Yeah, that one right there.
The blue one.
Oh, the blue one.
Good looking thing, isn't it?
It's quite nice that you've got a burger on the
Look
front
at that.
Of it.
And forward by Dr. Rupi.
There you go. There you go.
Thanks for that, mate.
So this is the Goan style curry with banana blossom that I've never cooked before. So this is going to be interesting. Awesome ingredient already. I think it's kind of got like the texture of jackfruit.
Yep.
So it's really nice. And I had to go to the Filipino store around the corner to get banana blossom. You can get it online as well. But then he also gave me these, which are green beans.
Yeah. So which king green awesome beans, yeah.
King green they beans, yeah. I mean, these are massive.
They're so long.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to
chop
great.
Them. Don't worry. You don't want to get one of those in your teeth.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah. So I've already made the paste that is also in the book as well. Beautiful flavors in this. Cumin, coriander seed, garlic, ginger. Amazing. Really, really. And I love the fact that a lot of your recipes actually go into the paste and stuff. I remember you telling me you went hard on curry.
Oh, yes, we did. Our publisher actually just told us, look, for your next book, you've got enough curries now. Uh-huh. Let's dial back on the spice a bit.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we go deep.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. And you do your research as well, which I love. So I'm going to get cracking with this. I've got some veg stock, got a bit of coconut milk, some mushrooms, going to bulk it up a bit. Some of the banana blossom that I've just got marinating in the tamarind.
Nice.
Another beautiful ingredient that you guys use a lot. And yeah, we're going to get cracking. So tell me about the book, man.
Incredible.
I mean, I already know about the book because I read the book and I did the foreword for it because I love you guys. But yeah, tell me a bit more about it.
Well, I mean, you know, I have to get this off my chest even before we talk about the book. Banana blossom. I actually saw one a few months ago in real life growing.
Did you actually?
When I was in Bali. Oh, yeah. There was this swimming pool and there was a banana tree there and there was this thing hanging off the bottom, this kind of almost conical shaped item. I was like, I'm sure that's a banana blossom. It's definitely a banana tree. It looks like that's a blossom. So I Googled it. I was like, yep, that's a banana blossom.
And there you go. Made it into your book?
It's not this one. This one had to get canned, but they are real things.
Yeah.
The first time we ever had banana blossom was a place in Stoke Newington. It's a vegan, it's a fish and chip shop that had like jumped on the vegan bandwagon. We rocked up there because we heard that this vegan fish and chips was to die for. And we tried it and we were like, goodness me, it's absolutely crazy. Yeah. So yeah, the sort of flakiness of it like is a perfect mimicry for fish.
Yes. Yeah. So I suppose this is like the inspiration for the Goan style curry.
Exactly.
Right?
We wanted a Goan fish curry.
Gotcha.
And so we're using banana blossom to be the fish in this one.
Brilliant.
So the book, you asked about the book.
Oh, yes, we did. So the book. It's called Bosch Healthy Vegan. It's our fourth book, our third cookbook. It's the first time we've sort of dipped our toe into 100% healthy. We worked with a NHS registered dietitian and it kind of, if you were to live your life eating food from that book, you'd be in pretty good shape, I feel. Mm. Because, and obviously, there's a bunch of stuff at the beginning of the book as well, not only recipes, but like our attitude and philosophy to kind of good living, be it positive mindset or the way that you sleep or anything else like that. It's a good book. If I notice it myself.
Well, we'll have to find out what you think of the recipe, Ruby.
Yeah. Well, this will be one of the first recipes that I'm actually cooking from it, because when you guys sent it to me, I never got a chance to actually cook the recipe, so this is like perfect timing. I'm sure it's going to be great, because your other books are incredible. So tell me about the journey, man, because we met through a mutual friend of mine, of ours, rather, Nish Bedi, who's been on the podcast.
Yes, he has.
Urological surgeon, lovely dude. We met in Sydney, and I remember him telling me about you guys back then. And he was like, you know, you should meet my mates. They're doing, like, you know, this vegan thing, and it's getting traction. But your story obviously starts way, way before then.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Funny story about Nish, actually, because I actually had a like.
Tell us a funny story about Nish. Yeah. Love one.
if you have listened to that podcast, you'll hear that Nish is a very, very intelligent guy, and he's a urologist, and he will have been talking about, you know, how men should eat if they've got issues, yeah. And so he's really, really very learned. But he was so nervous. Yeah. And so I had a big chat with him the day before just to kind of like, you know, let him... Because I think he, being a urologist, he was concerned about the science and if he misrepresented some science. Yeah. Yeah. So obviously it's a different skill set that you're now employing to come and chat to people on a podcast where you take things a bit more lighthearted, yeah, to writing papers and like being a proper surgeon. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Nish is a good mate of ours. And yeah, he introduced us. We were setting up Bosch. We had this new vision that plant-based food was important for planetary health and for the health of humanity as well. About 4 years ago, we realized there weren't enough recipes out there in the world. Mm. And we were fueled by this desire to save the planet, nothing less than save the planet. So we set up the world's biggest vegan cafe. Only it was on Facebook, and you have to bring your own ingredients, cook your own food, and do the washing up.
Yeah, it's been quite a wild ride, because when we first set up Bosch, neither Henry and I are trained cooks. Our background isn't in cooking. So we kind of had to teach ourselves on the job. And to be honest with you, if we look back at some of the original recipes, videos we put out, you kind of think, you could have done with a little bit more cumin there. Or, yeah. Ooh, you've gone heavy on the oil. Yeah. But now it's sort of like, yeah, so we kind of threw ourselves into this journey because we were very passionate about it, because we feel that like vegan food is something that you really can get passionate about, because it's like the three main pillars, and then the fourth we'll probably talk about in a second as well, which is obviously animal agriculture and how bad it is for the environment, animal agriculture and how bad it is for the animals, and then human health, because my mum always told me, I don't know if your mum told you, always eat your greens, and we've kind of taken that literally. Yeah. Yeah. But then the fourth pillar is kind of social justice, and how, the food choices the West make is obviously very, very bad for the majority of people in maybe slightly lesser well-off nations. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a big one for us.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, you've written a non-cookbook. I don't know what you call those.
Non-fiction. They would call it the smart thinking category.
Yeah.
And it's how to live vegan.
Yeah.
It's a how-to guide.
Yeah, so you've really put like a lot of those sort of principles into that book. I remember reading it, because you gave me a copy of it as well.
Yeah.
You got an endorsement by Russell Brand as well, I noticed, on the front, which is great. Yeah. This must have taken a while for you guys to actually come to this way of thinking. So take me back before you started Bosch and how you were living your life back then, and how you sort of like transitioned on your journey.
Sure. I guess we came from the startup world. Yeah. So we were both mates living in the same flat. And I'd founded this company, and then Ian was in between jobs, and I was like, dude, come help me out with this company. So he did. So together we set up this thing called Ping Tune, where you ping your mates' tunes. That was the
ping
idea.
Tune.
Ping Tune, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know the name of it.
Yeah, it was called Ping Tune.
Ping Tune.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And it was a messaging app before messaging apps really, really kicked off.
Gotcha, okay.
If we'd been a bit smarter, we might have pivoted into something like TikTok.
Yeah.
But we didn't.
Yeah,
So
to be fair, I think TikTok, for those of people who don't know, it's like one of the main social media channels that is like growing rapidly. But I think like back then, mate, it probably would have been way too early.
Yes.
Because you would have needed Snapchat and then Instagram and the stories and then everything else to essentially like teach people how to interact with that sort of platform.
Absolutely.
So
I think at that point, the hardware wouldn't have been there either, because it's like sort of video based. So it's like TikTok and Snapchat have kind of come about because the phones have got better.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were working together in this startup, and we got used to working together, and we got used to the thrill of building something of your own rather than working in a job. But it lacked purpose. And we'd raised money into that company. We ended up pushing it down and wrapping it up in the end, and learned a lot of lessons from that. And I guess both of us just went searching for something with a bit more meaning. And then we both discovered vegan food separately.
Yeah, my sort of response to finding veganism and wanting to pursue it as a career was to head back to Sheffield, where we're both from, and set up a vegan cafe. Because, I mean, my philosophy was, okay, I want to show people that vegan food is really, really good. And my, like, matter-of-fact kind of attitude to it was just actually put food on people's plates. So I went back to Sheffield for around about 4 or 5 months and found one of my friends who was also in a bit of a sort of place where he wanted to do something different. And yeah, we kind of started looking for new spaces in Sheffield as for potential places. And we kind of went quite far down the line. And then Henry called me up and was like, mate, I think this idea of a cafe of yours is a good one. But I think I can counter your idea of a cafe and say, why don't we open a vegan cafe for the whole world on the internet? And my initial response was like, you're crackpot. No, we're not doing that. But after a little bit of cajoling and gentle persuasion, Henry was like, persuaded me to come back down. And that I came back down, I think it was on the 23rd of May, 2016. Mm. I remember that because it was...
23rd of May, 2016, yeah, that, exactly.
And okay. Our first video came out on the 16th of June, 2016. Okay. The reason why I remember is because I was coming back down to London because it was Hull City versus Sheffield Wednesday in the playoff final. Yeah. Yeah, my dad's a Stoke Hull City fan, so...
Really, yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So you started this project, and the idea was to create, as you... beautifully put it right there, like the world's first online vegan cafe where you bring your own materials, your own ingredients, and you do your own washing up. But like, what was the plan? Like, what was like? I'm assuming you guys didn't have jobs then, or
Yeah, we were kind of both in between, but knew it would be fairly straightforward to build something up again. Mm. I think the plan was never to feature us as part of Bosch, gotcha. But the plan was to create a vegan version of Tasty, yeah. BuzzFeed's Tasty. Yeah. Those videos had just become super popular that were top down, and there was nothing vegan. There were no good vegan recipes that we were aware of. And so we thought, let's just build a brand. That's why we got a name, Bosch, that sounds like a brand. Yeah. And eventually we'll make food and we'll kind of build this kind of all these products and solutions around this brand. But to begin with, let's just give people recipes for free. And put this resource out there, because ultimately that will reduce the number of like high carbon meals that are getting made, yeah. And it'll improve people's health. So the plan was start making videos, work really hard, become really like big on Facebook, and then work it out.
Yeah. And work it out thereafter.
Work it
really.
Out
so
later
you're just
on,
literally
yeah.
just going head first, and like you didn't yeah. really have like a business plan as such, or like. You know, a strategy.
Well, there
or...
was. Do you know? It's interesting you ask, right? Because I looked and I found a manifesto from early 2017.
Yeah.
So that would have been 6 months after we'd kicked off. Okay. And I remember we were sat in the Hoxton Hotel in London. We were sat in the Hoxton Hotel in London, and we manifested our thoughts down onto a Google document. And this Google document is only about 4 pages long, but it does say, "We will." Build the biggest plant-based vegan publishing channel, mm-hmm. launch the biggest vegan cookbook, get the first vegan TV show,
yeah.
and then the fourth thing was get a range of products in supermarkets.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that was 3 years ago. Yeah.
That's insane.
So there was kind of a strategy that we've adhered to, but it took longer than we thought.
But as you said, that strategy came after 6 months of building an audience and yeah. sort of realizing that in actual fact, we're onto something here. Vegan as kind of philosophy is growing, and more people are becoming interested in it. And we're kind of forging a place like... as one of the influencers in the space. So yeah, I think the business plan came after the audience, and yeah, it's been pretty good. So now we've just put pen to paper on the next kind of goals.
Tell us about those. you can't leave us on the hang
there.
Well, there's a few, like, we were talking about it before, right? About, like, there's, obviously, the book thing has done really, really well. So we're going to continue, like, kind of, keeping our sort of place at the top of the tree when it comes to vegan cookbooks. Hopefully, we've got this TV show now, so hopefully the next stage on that is the continuation of and getting another TV show in. And then we've already got a couple of products in supermarkets. Yeah. We've got the collaboration with Kettle Chips. We've got our brand on Vitalite, which is kind of part... partly kind of advertising our new platform, Bosch Method, which we can talk about in a minute. But then, yeah, we're working on our actual own products. So that's going to be another sort of thing that we'll build out on.
Yeah. But it's interesting, this whole goal setting thing, because we set that and then we didn't look at it again. It wasn't something we came back to every 6 months and thought, are we achieving this? We set it, we set our intentions, and then we pretty much forgot about it and just got on with month by month, day by day decisions. But I do find it helps to steer you if you spend that time to sit down and put your intentions on paper, and your mind almost subconsciously just makes that your direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a useful exercise to do. But I think also it's important to state that our number one goal is all about improving the health of the planet and the number of people eating plant-based meals.
Yeah.
So we're not about converting people to go vegan, but we are about getting more people to have more vegan and plant-based meals, and maybe even rebranding the word so that we've got a more inclusive, dip your toe in kind of approach to the word vegan.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because this is definitely something that I wanted to chat about in a little bit more detail, because I think sometimes the word can be off-putting for a lot of people who would have otherwise dipped their toe.
Yes.
Because, you know, it makes it seem like it's either this way or you can't do it, and you can't label yourself a vegan. So we should definitely talk about that. And the other thing I want to mention is the goal setting thing. I think is fantastic. I had no idea that that's what you guys did. And it's honestly, it kind of gives me goosebumps, because I think, you know, the fact that it wasn't front of mind the whole time, you had it tucked away in a little Google document. It must have, you know, sat in your brain literally, and it's now manifesting itself into the books, the TV shows, the products, etc.
It's fascinating how the mind works, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm a big believer in that. It's like, you know, some people call it the secret or law of attraction or whatever. But I think, you know, there is some science behind goal setting, setting your objectives, having your metrics and your key results, and executing on that as well. And you don't have to be fastidious about it every single day, but as long as you know the general sort of direction, you'll meander toward it.
Completely. Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned the key results thing. I presume you're up to speed with OKRs.
So I've set them for my company.
Good man. It's so good. For the benefit of any of your listeners or viewers, OKRs is objectives and key results. And that's the way that, like, Google and a lot of future thinking startups are articulating their plans and then having measurable results that they can look for and things they want to achieve. And yet it's something we're looking to do more and more as we grow, is be a bit more religious at looking at them every month.
Yeah, totally. Because I think, like, so the OKR document that my friend sent me, he started a company called Yieldify a few years ago now. It's one of the fastest growing tech companies in the UK. And he sent me this video of, I'll link to it in the show notes, actually, the podcast. It's a guy from Google talking to a whole bunch of people outside and inside Google about how everyone, regardless of the size of your company, should be setting OKRs. Even if your company is just one, you should be setting your objective. And so objectives and key results are essentially making more transparent the general top level direction of your company by, okay, what do you want to achieve? I want to write a book. Or I want to have a community where I can teach them about XYZ. And then your key results will be the metrics by which you measure that objective measure. And then you come back to that Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4, or you can do it biannually as well.
Yeah.
And I just think it's like the tech guys have been doing this for years. I think it was IBM who even started it, and then Google sort of like gone thereafter. But it's, I think it's just something you can just do in life, regardless if you have a company, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a good book actually by the founder of Intel. It's called High Performance Management. And he talks about that a lot. And then another one called Measure What Matters, which is literally like a playbook on how to set OKRs.
Measure What Matters. That Measure really What familiar. Matters,
yeah.
Who's that boy?
I can't remember the author's name.
We'll link to that in the podcast. Cool. Oh, that's brilliant, man. So tell me about your new sort of objectives. I really want to know. Give us a scoop.
Well, we're still working them out, but I think Ian pretty much hinted at them all then. You know, product range is important. We want to also start coaching people a bit more personally with their diet. So we've got the new book, Healthy Vegan. We're also launching an online plan where people, it's not so much a plan as a subscription service, where people can come and hang out with us and we will feed them three meals a day, based on their weight, their age, their sex, their goals, and we'll also, if they want to, allow them to test their blood and find out like any nutrients that they may be deficient in, and then we'll tweak the recipes that we suggest. So if they seem to be a little low in iron, we may help them eat more iron in their food, and also let them know that. So it's a really cool thing, because obviously a lot of plant-based people might be deficient in certain things. It's one of the things that people are scared of. Yeah. So we're going to help them to understand what healthy eating means.
Yeah. That's brilliant. I mean, like, I think even those who are not plant-based are deficient in a lot of things. I certainly see that from doing histories with patients and actually finding out clinical symptoms that could be indicative of nutrient deficiencies, whether that be vitamin A or D or... you know, a whole plethora of different issues that people can use food as an adjunct to therapy and actually helping people with them. But it's, I think people love to see improvements and they love an investigation. Us in the NHS, we try and limit that as much as possible, but there are certainly instances where it's necessary.
It's so good to be sat here actually talking to an actual doctor, because we talk about this stuff all the time. You know, people will ask us the question, isn't vegan a deficient diet? And it's not a complete diet. And what we'll typically say, and maybe you can validate some of our thinking here, but it's, we will take a B12 spray from time to time. We take this one that actually is specific for vegans. But other than that, we're just very focused on making sure we're trying to get as much colour in our body as possible. And obviously, like, anyone in the UK can be deficient in vitamin D. B12, my granddad was deficient in B12. And arguably, we're probably better off with B12 than most of the population because we supplement it. Whereas a lot of people could be deficient if they're meat eaters.
One thing that we definitely have enough of in our diet is fiber, which I mean, a lot of people, you say, how many fruit and veg have you eaten like this week? And you know, we've probably nailed as many fruit and vegetables as a lot of people eat in a week in a morning. So I think there's a lot to be said for eating a plant-based diet, because veggies are great.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think like this is the one thing that kind of frustrates me about the wellness industry in its current form is, you know, we latch onto one thing, whether it be a particular dietary regimen or protein, for example, which is like dominating the conversation. Not just like vegans, where do you get your protein, but even people who eat way more adequate protein, which is all of us pretty much, vegans, vegetarians and omnivores, we all eat, you know, adequate amounts of protein. But it's become like a thing, like, oh, you need to get your protein. That's why we're putting it in like chocolate bars and water and coconut and stuff like that. So you don't need to do that. You do need to focus on fiber, because that's what we're really, really lacking. And it's about the nutrient density of your food and the number of different ingredients you have and diversity and variety, rather than just adding one particular type of protein to your products and stuff, right?
Makes sense.
It definitely makes sense.
So what's going on with this food, by the way?
We should probably come back to this.
It's looking
food.
Amazing.
So I hope I'm doing your recipe right. I've just, so first of all, I put the paste in with the coconut oil. I use coconut oil instead of sunflower oil. And the shallots, and then stirred that around, added to the chopped tomatoes. I've annotated your recipe very, very slightly, because I couldn't get baby tomatoes. I just got regular tomatoes. I'm sure you guys are very easy with that. That's all good. Exactly. and then I've added the veg stock, the mushrooms, coconut milk, a little touch of syrup, but you can use maple syrup. And the green beans have just gone on, and they're just going to take about 5-6 minutes to steam through it. And mate, it's smelling delicious.
It doesn't it smell amazing?
It's incredible, And we've got like four hungry guys here to feed after this, and the crew are like looking at this like amazing. So the word vegan, tell me about that. And how, what are your thoughts for the future on the rebrand?
Well, we've kind of, for our first book, we avoided the word vegan, because we knew like 3 years ago when we were working on it, and 2 years ago when it came out, the word vegan was still pretty misunderstood. You would struggle to sort of see the word vegan outside an eatery on the high street, whereas now, 3 years on, or two and a half years on, you struggle not to see the word vegan. It's kind of just been a completely different attitude to what it was. It's kind of, it's a flip shift in the way that people think. And I think that there's a lot of people out there, like us and like loads of other sort of influencers online, who are kind of doing their bit to put vegan food in the places it needs to be seen. And obviously, people have sort of watched documentaries like Cowspiracy, like Earthlings, now like Game Changers, and they're changing their attitude to plant-based food. And big supermarkets have jumped on board with it, and they're all just like just flooding their shelves. It was like 23% of all new products last 25. Year. 25%. 25%, yeah. Of all new products last year happened to be plant-based, which wow. is quite unbelievable. So when it comes to the word vegan, I think we're obviously had the how to live vegan and healthy vegan. We're a lot more warm to the idea of using it. And I think we're warm to the idea of using it because people are warm to the idea of receiving it. Yeah. So, but essentially, plant-based is cool. Vegan is cool. Just as long as the food is plant-based, it's all good.
Yeah. And then I think if you fast forward into the future, like 5 years, 10 years from now, we would anticipate that everybody can dip their toe in to be vegan and eat vegan food without being criticized for using the word without following a strict set of rules. Yeah. Yeah. If you actually look at the dictionary definition of vegan, which we talk about in How to Live Vegan, mm-hmm. The definition as set by the Vegan Society is a way of living that seeks to avoid animal cruelty and animal ingredients as far as is possible and practicable. Mm-hmm. And in that as far as possible and practicable, there's space. And that space means we will eat an avocado or a fig, which may have had bees involved or wasps involved in the pollination process. And it also, depending on your interpretation and the fact that every human is different, it might mean that someone, you know, like someone we used to live with who's vegan but will happily eat non-vegan sweets all week long, can still call herself vegan because she's saying she's vegan.
Yeah.
And it also kind of means the actual word vegan is almost an unattainable ideal that we want to get to, but it's impossible in our day-to-day lives because the iPhone wouldn't be vegan. A motor car might not be vegan because of the parts in the engine. Your books might have non-vegan glue in them. So vegan is a really beautiful thing, and everyone who aspires to be that is an incredible person, and it comes with like love and passion and kindness to the world. But I think if we're going about this judging everybody based on how vegan they are by our own standards, we'll just end up going around in circles. Yeah. And we want to move away from that and get to a more welcome, all-encompassing meaning of the word, which also, it's not just us, like veganuary. They made it okay for you to try it out for a month and see what you think. And so everyone, future people and the London bubble are all thinking about the word vegan like this, that we experience. Yeah. But I think once you move outside of London, you can find more old-fashioned perspectives on the word.
I think we kind of agree that plant-based food is better for the environment than meat-based food, right? So it's like the best way to measure like is not so much the people that's saying I am vegan, because you can pick holes in how vegan they are. It's ultimately how much plant-based food is being sold. So, and that's like really the only measurable out there. Yeah. So like when you're looking at like, I don't know, big supermarkets figures and like they're 5 years ago, it was like 2%, and then it's rising and it's just rising year on year. That's really the only marker of how much plant-based food is getting eaten. Yeah, so I think we need to pay a bit more attention to that.
Big, imperfect changes rather than like requiring everybody to be perfect.
Vegan-ish.
That's our vision.
Yeah, I think like I heard something on the radio today actually about how we shouldn't be looking for perfection, we should be looking for progress.
Yes,
and I think certainly progress is what you guys are advocating, which is, you know, eating more plants, trying vegan for a month or so, educating yourself about the transparency in the supply chain of where your food comes from and stuff. It feels sometimes the more you dig, the more you realize like how difficult it is to be a 100% true vegan.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite overwhelming for a lot of people, I think, right?
Certainly. Yeah, and is it even like, can you imagine someone that has every single art, because like paint, once you really delve into it, you can really like find it very hard to find vegan products. We use vegan products at home, so we'll use vegan shampoos and conditioners but we do drive a car. And so I think the more we can just be progressive and be accepting of everybody and welcome them in to try some vegan food and then see what they do with it, the better.
Yeah.
And the less time energy we spend judging people on their choice of car, the better.
Because I think like people who are anti-vegan, and it really does rile some people up, you know, the less accepting of the term, the less accepting of the people, they have, you know, prejudice against them and stuff. they can use a whole bunch of arguments to argue about how unvegan vegan people are. How do you respond to that?
I mean, I think, we're talking about hypocrisy.
We're talking about,
as some people would say, exposing vegans' hypocrisy. That's the kind of term that somebody would use. And how ridiculous that someone can be living their life, trying to make the world a better place, talking about trying to make the world a better place, eating a better diet, like being selfless in terms of their diet and trying to encourage others to be more selfless, and then we'll pick them up on something because they're not wearing shoes that we think match up with what we think they should wear.
Or they've had a leather jacket they've had for 10 years or something like that.
It's like that, therefore that would mean that the only people that could talk about vegan food would have to be living in a farm in the Cotswolds with everything self-sustainable, no products from Apple or Google or Microsoft, and therefore unable to communicate with anyone anyway. So I think if we can move away from thinking that vegans can be hypocrites and move towards just celebrating the fact that they're saying we should all be better, and maybe we should all be better than I am. Like, I'm not perfect, Ian's not perfect, you're not perfect, but we're all trying in our own way, and let's celebrate that rather than criticizing people for not being good enough. That's what we should be doing.
It reminds me of a quote from the latest Aziz Ansari stand-up where he's like, you know, in 50 years time we should always be looking back on ourselves and be like, What on earth were we doing 50 years ago?
Exactly.
We were horrible people.
Just like need to adopt that kind of marathon mindset of just kind of like just chip away, just like 1% better every day. And if everybody was doing that, in 100 days time we'd be 100% better.
That's so true.
And I think like, I mean, we talked a little bit on the podcast before with Venetia, who obviously has got like an amazing engaged following that is all about reducing consumption in general and conscious consumption as well when you do choose to consume. And we talked about like how it can just get really overwhelming when you're like, when you realize, wow, how many things are wrong with our supply systems when it comes to everything beyond just food. I mean, the food and clothing are the big ones that come to mind, but then like you mentioned, like the cars and like the paint and transport,
And what's shocking about it is as well, it's like in living memory, it's become infinitely worse, even though we should be getting a lot, lot better. And like a really good, like for instance, there's mushrooms there, right? So you go to the supermarket when we were like 11, because we're roughly the same age, right? You go to the supermarket and you're like 15 years old and there'd be loads of open mushrooms and there'd be brown paper bag there and you'd fill it up. Now, walking to that same supermarket, you can't do that. It's like you've got the same product wrapped up in plastic, wrapped up in cling film. And things like the advent of like coffee pods or, there's an abundance of things that is like making our lives easier, but just with complete disregard for the environment completely. So, yeah, I think we some big changes need to sort of happen and need to happen pretty damn quickly.
I think, you know, it's funny because it's having not only a detrimental impact on the environment, but also on our brains as well. I've been reading a lot of Dan Levitin's work another one it's a book called Less is More. And it's all about actually reducing the amount of choices that we have, because we have a finite amount of neuronal power, so brain power, to make decisions. And if we expend those all by choosing what type of milk to buy, or like, you know, trying to get the best type of mushroom, or trying to, you know, looking through your Twitter feed and actually being bombarded with all these messages, it takes a lot of brain power to compute all those different choices. And when it comes to the big choices that you actually need to make, like, you know, your life decisions or like decisions at work, etc., we've expended all our energy. And so it's almost like the whole vegan argument is actually about, okay, let's just do better with all these things so we don't have to make those undue choices, and we can shape our food landscape by making choices when you're in the supermarket or when you're in the clothing store.
It's so true. I think it was David Attenborough's show. It wasn't David Attenborough himself, but it was someone on his show that said, we can just start with the one thing that we can all control is those three meals a day that we eat. You know, yes, people fly, and yes, people might drive a car, and maybe not everyone can afford an electric car, or they don't agree that's the right choice. But what the really easy thing we control is what we eat every single day. And as you talk a lot about the health, and we love your books and your guidance on health, we find really invaluable, and very progressive, because a lot of people aren't thinking, and some doctors still aren't thinking about plant-based as being a good way to go. So I think it's really important that we, as humanity, are thinking about what we eat,
because it's so easy
and it can benefit the environment too.
So it's like, it's a simple thing really. It's like the best thing that you can possibly do for yourself to improve the environment is just eat delicious food. That's it.
Yeah. Like we're about to eat now, exactly. Hopefully.
What's been like the most sort of shocking thing that you found along your journey? Because I'm assuming like through all the books and through communicating with the basically chatting to people within your community and going to conferences and what you've learned and chatting to people abroad as well through your travels, like what's been the most shocking stuff that you've actually found about like how we live currently and what we actually need to change beyond food?
Shocking in terms of?
In terms of like what actually made you realize, wow, okay, we actually do need to make like huge changes to how we're living. And
I mean, to be honest, this stuff's easy. Mm-hmm. Because it's broadcast into our brains every day through Facebook.
Yeah.
If you have a look at what's going on in farming, mm-hmm. We're not talking about, you know, really nice family farmers who on the hills in Wales, but when you look at mega dairies in the US or even some of that stuff in the UK, it's just inhumane. And like if we animal agriculture isn't the first thing that we talk about, but we became real lovers of animals after going vegan. And it's, if there were a hell on earth for animals, this is it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so I think you're shocked when you see that stuff, but you're not shocked just for the animal welfare, although you do think about that. But it's just not the right way to do business. The amount of waste that a factory farm will give off, the amount of slurry that will go into the ecosystem and will mess up people's health who live nearby, the amount of methane being pumped out by all of those animals that's then kind of going into the atmosphere. And by the way, methane is much, much, much more, has a much more heating effect than carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. So the methane is a real problem for the environment. Just the sheer irresponsibility of the way this mass consumption of meat is taking place. Mm. It's shocking once you really look into it. And that's what motivates us, as well as the desire to feed people nice food. And I think the only other aspect of it is, have you seen the film Elysium with Matt Damon?
Yeah. I haven't seen it, but I know the general synopsis of it.
So the synopsis is like the Earth is struggling, but there's this really nice like satellite space station outside of Earth where all the rich people live, and they've got perfect health and perfect food, and everyone on Earth is struggling. For me, it feels a little bit like we're living in the West. It's all nicey-nicey. We've got access to doctors like you who can tell us what to eat, and everything here is lovely. But then we've got vast continents of places where they can't eat good food, can't get good healthcare. They're dying from diseases because of the way that we eat. And if we were to eat all plant-based or all eat like 95% plant-based, then we would have more space for land. Mm-hmm. We'd have more space to let land like grow fallow. There'd be less climate change, and we could find a way to get food to people who need food.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that injustice is huge.
Yeah, I
realize I just went off on.
No, that's great.
It's a big thing for us.
I think the passion speaks out, and you know, what I love about you guys is that you are speaking to your audience through the medium of food and you're making it a lot more accessible to people. Because I think when you find out about these mass agricultural practices that are impacting our ecosystems on a huge, huge level, you don't think about that minute decision that you make in the supermarket as having a significant change, right? A significant impact on the grandeur of things. You can feel quite powerless. Mm-hmm. But one way in which you guys are helping is actually to coax people about the collective power that we all have in the decisions that we make on a daily basis. My caveat to that, and this is me playing devil's advocate, how do you think we're going to actually institute mass change? Because my personal belief is that I don't think we can rely on the 10, 15% of people becoming woke. for want of a list of, I think it's going to take massive institutional change.
Okay, yeah. Well, do you know what? I think we are seeing changes in supply and demand already having big impacts. So the sales of milk were down, dairy milk were down, and the sales of oat milk went up last year. Yeah. We are seeing 91% of purchases of the Beyond Burger, which we can talk about the health benefits of that if you want to. And it is a bit processed, but 91% of the sales were for meat eaters. And so thanks to all of these flexitarians and meat eaters and mostly plant-based people, vegans have now got more vegan options to buy. Yeah. So I think that change is happening slowly. I think the world does respond to market conditions. So when vegan food is tastier mm-hmm. and is healthier, and that's communicated right, we will see shifts, and we are seeing shifts. And I think governments and institutions just always lag behind,
they
right?
They work too slowly, yeah.
I think they will get there in the end. Think about smoking and tobacco.
Yeah, I think like the glamorization of plant-based food is going to play a big role. So people like Lewis Hamilton, people like Serena Williams, are playing a big role in kind of opening people's minds to the idea of plant-based food. Imagine if, for instance, Tottenham Hotspur got a new nutritionist in and he happened to have a plant-based philosophy and he thought, right, I'm going to just like get Tottenham Hotspur, like the whole team eating plant-based, and they are running a bit quicker, they seem to be recovering a bit faster, and they're winning more games, whatever. All it takes is like one or two people to make like that kind of big change for the whole kind of attitude toward plant-based food to kind of shift. So I think the glamorization of plant-based food, making it cool, is a really good way to sort of get people excited about it. And then what will happen is people will go and buy the plant-based food, and then the big supermarkets will read that data, and they'll start putting more food on their shelves, and before you know it, you just got this kind of just this positive kind of loop just getting bigger and bigger. And then when you see that the society is kind of making steps to its own positive change, then the big sort of behemoth of government behind it might go, oh, maybe we should get involved with this sort of stuff as well, seeing as this is what the people are asking for. So yeah.
But then there's people like yourself as well.
Exactly.
So institutions like hospitals.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Like you're a poster boy of
pushing the plant-based diet, and then thinking about the NHS and what's being served to people who are sick. Because if you're sick in hospital, like, plants and green food is going to be great for you. Also thinking about schools and what's being eaten in schools. We need a version of you, but that's thinking about schools and like getting more plant-based options in schools as well. Maybe you could do that too. But like, absolutely, the institutions need to get on board. But I think we can see things taking a snowball effect. And they will pick up, but you need to keep doing what you're doing. Yeah. We need to keep doing what we're doing.
Like, I'm an advocate for definitely people having choice. Yeah. And I think certainly more plants the better. Yeah. And I think we have to shift our focus away from meat being the center stage and actually introducing more fiber and more color and variety into our meals. I'm not vegan. I'm not 100% plant-based, but I'm definitely of that sort of 85-90% majority and being plants. And I welcome like more institutional changes actually happening to make people aware of that. But I think lobbying groups and a whole bunch of other sort of issues will cloud whether that's going to become a reality or not. What I would say is, so I was asked to talk at the Future Food Conference last year. Nice. It's an industry-focused conference of B2B, essentially, with the likes of Kraft and General Mills and a whole bunch of people in attendance. And I was asked to talk about the health impact of food to an audience. And I stayed for the rest of the couple of days because I'm just genuinely interested in supply chain. And this conference covered everything from, you know, how you trace food, preservation systems, refrigeration, all this different kind of stuff. And honestly, the number one thing that was being talked about was plant-based options.
Amazing.
It was incredible. And that, like, I'm going to do a YouTube video on this because I think there's like three main types, or maybe we can talk about it now. There's three main types of like vegan or plant-based options. I think they use the word plant-based more than vegan.
Yeah.
You know, there's your ultra processed stuff, which is just like, you know, seitan and everything just put into, you know, anything just to make sure it's vegan and it's palatable and it mimics meat. And then you have like the whole sort of versions, which are made from like beans and like maybe a bit of tofu, maybe some spices. So it's a very like wholesome product. And then you have the sort of like cell-based stuff, which is very new, which is where you're having like, you know, animal cells that are cultured and then put in labs and stuff, and the cost of that is going to come right down. I think that's going to still have the same issues, and that might actually cause a reverse of what we really want to happen, which is limiting meat consumption overall, because that's still going to have some of the same properties as the hemines in meat, for example.
Yeah.
But there is definitely a lot of interest from industry in plant-based options because of the demand that you're in part responsible for.
There you go. Yeah, fantastic news. It's really exciting.
Yeah. I think it's super exciting. We're like right at we're in the midst of a kind of cultural revolution, I feel, with a lot of people who have got access to information, who care greatly about the future. And like when the population is swelling and you're kind of like in your 30s and you're thinking about having a baby, you kind of like wonder what kind of world you're going to leave for them. So like doing your damnedest with what you've got available to you to make the world a better place for the future generations to come. Plant-based food is just like a really nice, easy way into that positivity. Yeah.
As a man who likes studies, we know that because obviously we've read your books. And by the way, one thing we should mention is, which most people won't know, is that you looked over and gave the kind of thumbs up to our first ever cookbooks nutrition section.
Oh, cool.
Didn't you? Do you remember
that? Yes,
you
did. I did.
That was the early days.
You shut me out the acknowledgements, I remember that.
Good few years ago. Yeah. But for people who like detail, go read the back of Bosch and you'll see Rupi's name. I forgot where I was going with that.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
I genuinely forgot that.
Yeah.
I remember you sent it to me. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll have a look at it.
Yeah. I can't remember where I was going. I've completely lost my train of thought.
I can't remember either, but I don't know. I liked where it was going.
Oh, no, that's right.
Well, shall we talk about the food?
Yeah, as a man who likes studies. Yeah. Right. Are you familiar with Joseph Poore's study?
Joseph Poore.
P-O-O-R-E. Joseph Poore. So he did like the biggest ever study, like a global meta study, you call it, right? A study of studies, meta-analysis.
Was he part of the 37 experts, part of the Eat Lancet report?
He might be.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
Cool.
You can look up on it and put it in the show notes. Essentially, Joseph Poore, he was not vegan at all, but he started this big study to find out which were the most sustainable animal-based products. He like looked worldwide. He took into account flying food all across the world, and he created a chart, like literally a list of the most sustainable and the least sustainable foods, and everything spread out that the plant-based options were the most sustainable and the animal-based were the least sustainable.
Like, I've seen this infographic.
Regardless of flying things, even the least sustainable tofu is more sustainable from a carbon perspective than the most sustainable animal-based food.
Yeah.
And it's just the biggest study ever done. And if we can look at that data and if we can all think about that data, I think that would have a really good impact on our choices. Yeah. We don't have to all choose the same things. Like, some people may still decide that they want to eat salmon or have eggs, or like that's their call. But if we could all just understand that is the best view of the truth that we've got, we could be in a much more informed place to make decisions about our diet. So that's our mission, and I think that's your mission too.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah, and I do know that infographic. I didn't know the researcher. Yeah. I'm definitely going to look that up, and I'll link to it.
Ella did a really good podcast with him.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. So if you're interested, give that a listen. It's like an hour, and he talks about it like really, like the common man can understand it quite easily. So it's well worth a listen. That one.
That's great. No, I'll definitely check that out, and I'll link to that in the podcast. There's a lot. There's going to be a lot of notes, aren't there? Yeah. One of the things that I was going to ask you about, now I've completely lost my train of thought. Oh yeah, I do need to look into sort of more farming methods, and I think that's going to have an important detriment on, you know, whether we're going to have a net positive or net negative onto the planet. There's a lot of farmers who are complaining that the culture of monocultures essentially is you know, at the detriment to the soil, or using too much in the way of inputs, as they regard them as essentially pesticides and herbicides. And we need to change the and incentivize farmers to do crop rotation, which, yes, in some cases can involve animals, but it doesn't necessarily need to be the killing of animals. It can actually still be a vegan farm. So again, depending on, like, you know, the demand that we create for plant-based foods, it could change that. But I think we need to have that in mind, that it's the soil health. I'm educating myself a lot
And you're not a farming expert, and neither are we. And we're not stood here telling farmers what they should and shouldn't do. We're just looking at the maths that are saying this stuff's more sustainable, this stuff's less sustainable, so could we move towards that? And by the way, because it is more sustainable, potentially we may be able to free up some land. So there may be some land in the UK, like some hilly areas of Wales, that aren't able to be farmed on, and currently there's sheep grazing that may be making lamb. Well, maybe that farmland could become fallow. Obviously farmers need jobs, and we are seeing systemic change happening, and more farmers are going to be thinking about whether they should move into plant-based dairy, which is a great thing, or are there other things that their skills could do. We have the utmost respect to farmers and their work ethic. Ian's family were farmers, but we are seeing the world changing, and maybe if we were eating more plants in the UK, we might find some pockets of land that could be rewilded and start to sequester a bit of carbon and get some biodiversity back, which would be a good thing.
My father, actually both my parents come from farming backgrounds as well. Cool. So we have an Indian farm, we have cows, obviously we're vegetarian, so we have cows and goats and stuff and plows and whatever. We grow garlic, sweet potato. I actually remember making a meal from sweet potato, and all my aunties would take taking the piss out of me, because traditional, to have a guy in the kitchen cooking sweet potato wasn't the norm. So anyway, talking of curries, I don't want to let this go. God, we've just been sat here try it, let me know if
thank you very much.
It meets your high standards.
It looks good.
I hope
it smells delightful.
I mean, the paste is incredible, really really good. I think that's going to become one of my staples.
Yeah, it's got a nice citrusy kind of note to it.
Yeah, I finished it off with the lime at the end.
Always a good idea.
Yeah, a bit coriander.
I find a little bit of acidity on the end of any dish is a good thing.
Oh, yeah. 100%, man.
I mean, I think the best thing about this dish is just the textures.
Yeah.
Obviously, the flavour is really, really good, but it's just you've got the sort of firm crunch from the green beans. Mm. You've got that kind of fishy flakiness from banana blossom. You got that really nice sweet tang from the tomatoes. It's really good.
Let me get you one.
That's fine, I can have a bit of Ian's. We share everything. But maybe I'll have my own spoon. Amazing.
We'll have a break and we're gonna eat this.
I have a question for you.
Go on.
So you've put coconut oil in this one, and we used sunflower oil.
Yeah,
and the reason we used sunflower oil is because obviously, it's a coconutty flavour, so coconut oil feels great. But it was to reduce the saturated fat. We were working with an NHS dietitian, and she advised that. What are your thoughts on saturated fat, coconut oil, etc.?
So I think the story goes a lot more than beyond whether something is classified as a saturated fat or unsaturated. There's different types of saturated fats based on the number of carbon chain or the length of the carbon chain. Mm-hmm. And I think, instead of looking at one particular aspect of an ingredient, you have to be looking at your overall diet quality. Overall, the evidence shows that high saturated fat diet is detrimental to health from a number of issues. However, those studies don't delineate what types of saturated fat there are and where that's coming from. And so, a high saturated fat item would be something like chips, because of the oil that's used in the chips, the frying method. But actually, and I know that that's not a pure saturated fat item. That's got refined carbohydrates in, it's probably got emulsifiers, probably got a whole bunch of other things in it that are making an unhealthier type of food.
Loads of salt.
Exactly, tons of salt as well. So I'm more concerned with the wholesome aspect of the quality of your food rather than the label of its components in terms of macro and micronutrient. I'm more interested in the holistic aspect. So my view on things like coconut oil, that I've got a really bad rap, it's up and down in reputation, right? Depending on what studies you're looking at and what time of year. I think it's an appropriate oil to use in the moderate amounts that you would use any oil, like an extra virgin olive oil or whatever. So yeah, those are my views on it. So I don't mind using a high saturated fat item in cooking, as long as you're not lathering it on. And I'm actually going to have a dietitian actually talking about the keto diet in a therapeutic manner. Mm. So the keto diet is an incredibly useful tool for drug-resistant epilepsy. There may be some additional uses as well in migraine and chronic pain, and certain types of cancers, which we're going to talk about in the podcast as well. But she's like a registered dietitian, and she knows a lot more about this than me. I'm just fascinated because it's become, again, like very trendy. There's even vegan keto as well.
We've tried it.
Yeah.
I think the thing with it is it's really hard to do because there aren't many options.
Yeah, exactly,
you have a lot of peanut butter.
Yeah.
But also it's for most people, like, I love you talking about the holistic aspects of it all. And I think when it comes to diet, like Ian said before, small changes make big impacts. For the people that we talk to, we want to advise them to just make small changes to your diet rather than going all in on keto one day and this thing the other day, because I just worry about what that might do to their body moving forward. But yeah, if you can use it to treat things, fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's originally what they used it for
back in
the 80s and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even fasting was used as a tool because that's probably the quickest way to get into nutritional ketosis, which is what the goal is. But I think if you use keto as a fashionable tool because you've heard it like increases your fat burn or increases your metabolism and you're going to lose all this weight, it's very hard to do. And what people, I fear, can tip into is having a high fat diet, not doing it properly, and then having carbohydrates, and then actually what you're eating is the standard American diet. It's literally the standard American diet. It's high fat and high carb. That's where my sort of worry comes in with keto in general. And there's a whole bunch of other aspects around there that I think warrant concern. And that's why I've purposely wanted to tackle this this subject head on, because I get asked about it a lot. And I'm like, look, I can't give you blanket recommendations, but let's chat about it. So I want to know about the culture of what it's like to have two founders for a company. What is it like? I mean, you guys clearly get on. You guys have been mates for years, way before Bosch. So
I think it's really good. I think two heads are better than one, basically. And also, like, having someone who's kind of in it with you completely it enables you to kind of split your tasks and your duties. So it's like, so one person's like working away on something that's very, very sort of company critical, and then the other person's doing something equally as critical but just completely different. And that I think is really, really good. I think obviously we've known each other for a long old while, so we kind of understand each other's strengths and we kind of work well with each other. And it's good to share the journey with someone. So if anyone is thinking about maybe setting up a company, having a co-founder is a very good idea to sort of lighten the load.
Completely agree. Mm-hmm. And you also, like, I would read books on building startups and they will often say find a co-founder. Yeah. And if you can't find a co-founder to come on board with your idea, then maybe you need to question your idea. And I remember that in that first company, like, wishing there was a co-founder. I know you were there the whole time, but you weren't sitting in the role of co-founder, and it was a very lonely place to be when there were 20 odd people. Mm-hmm. And so having a co-founder is just so much better. We can bounce ideas off each other. We can talk things through. We can divide and conquer, as Ian says. In fact, we're about to enter a phase which I haven't told you about yet. But we're about to, I think, enter a 3 to 4 week filming phase where we're just doing non-stop recipe videos for 4 weeks. You on one side of the room doing one set and me on the other side of the room doing the other set. Mm-hmm. That's cool. About to happen. So it means you can batch film as well, which is a good thing. There's testing times and there's moments that you wind each other up and have to work through problems and stuff. So if you are building something with a co-founder, just be prepared to like accept that people are different and find to appreciate your differences. Because, we have moments, don't we?
And those moments are really important because you both grow off the back of the learning of them. And the moments come because we're both passionate about the thing that we're trying to do. And having differences of opinion on certain things sometimes is good because you've got two opinions and you've got two ways to sort of approach the same thing. So I think it's good. It's really good.
Yeah. I mean, the data suggests that companies that have two founders are more likely to succeed. I think it's Y Combinator actually is a famous accelerator back in I think or in San Fran, West Coast anyway, that's always suggests that you should partner up and have this, you have a lot more chances of success. How has that helped you like generate the culture within your team? Because I'm assuming there's a lot more of you behind the scenes. And
yes.
Yeah.
Good question. I think that we have quite a small team, first of all. So it is just the two of us, Kathy and Charlie. But we've also just hired an MD, Natalie, which is very exciting. But I think in terms of culture, it's been a bit bitty because we'll sometimes be doing different things. So, for example, Ian might be making recipe videos and I might be writing words for the book. Or Ian might be out having a meeting and I'll be working with the guys on their edits. Sometimes we'll divide and conquer. I feel like our team probably suffered a little bit because we haven't all been a unit in the same place all the time. So and I also think they're probably getting a bit of you and a bit of me. Because ultimately your team culture ends up representing the founder's intentions or the two founders' intentions. And where they're quite sporadic, sometimes they just get a kind of mixed bag. But we're friends with them. That helps. So there's quite a nice communal culture. And now we've got Natalie here. I think she's going to help to really make sure there's a constant person that's there loving them and loving us and challenging us as well. So even if we are away or on a big press trip somewhere, the culture can develop.
Exactly. And I suppose like what we're doing is kind of cool, right? We've done a lot in a very short space of time. So Kat especially, like she came in when we were working at the shared office that we used to work at, and she was just like, she's been there from the off and has seen this thing just go from like proper startup mode to like, okay, well now we've got a TV show and we've got books out and this kind of thing. So she's been a big part of it. And I think it's exciting. It's an exciting place to be. I mean, I've had a proper job before and it's nowhere near as exciting as what we're doing now. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, I think it's a good place to be right now.
It's a fun thing, isn't it? And today's Friday. So we will go out for a couple of beers
later on.
The cool thing about Natalie actually having just joined is she's been working with them really closely on, and working, looking at what videos they're doing and making sure that's all streamlined. So hopefully we'll get early knock today.
Oh my
God. And we'll be out at 3 in the pub.
Three.
That's what she says. Yeah, that's what she said.
All right. We'll see if that pops.
She's the boss now. Yeah. She's telling us we have to as well.
It's good actually, like having Natalie around. She's like a heavyweight badass. Like she really is coming from, she used to be CEO of a big old company and she's helped us out along the way across the journey, like at little pockets. So she gets the company. She is an old friend of yours and a new friend of mine. And she gets the vision, man. So we're lucky to have her.
That's amazing. It's awesome to have like a purpose-led company. Like you clearly have a mission and that's allowed you to be successful along the way. What do you make of the whole process? And sorry to go back down like another sort of roller coaster ride of like up and down.
We love going into rabbit holes.
But what do you make of this whole concept of woke washing? And for if you haven't come across that before, it's something that I recently came across. It's basically big corporations trying to jump on the bandwagon on like startups like yourselves who actually have purpose-led and real missions. People like, I don't know, a famous brand of fried chicken, for example, now coming out with vegan and vegetarian options and stuff. Like how, what does that make you feel like? Does it make you feel angry? Do you think you welcome it?
I would say that I welcome it. These people, the Colonel, I think you may be referring to, do lots of bad stuff in the world. And but they also have massive impact because of the sheer number of locations and the sheer size of their operations and the amount of money that is spent with them on a regular basis. That is where many regular people shop. So if they start to add plant-based options to their menus, that's amazing.
That is amazing.
Even if they don't do it perfectly, even if maybe they're still using the same grill, it's still better than where they were before and it's quick change happening. So we like to support big brands who are jumping on the bandwagon because that's what progress looks like. Not everyone agrees with that. Some people wouldn't want to spend their money with that corporation, and I completely get that perspective. But for us, progress is about playing with the big boys, and they are the big boys.
Sometimes you have to trust your intuition, though. For every sort of like story of a company that's doing something with the best intentions, sometimes you just look at things and you think, what are you on about? Like, yeah. Like there's certain things out there. You just have to have a decent BS radar. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because think about, there was an advert from a big supermarket, I won't name them, but to do with removing palm oil from all of their products. The conversation isn't that simple around palm oil. It's a more difficult conversation to have than just we're removing all palm oil. And I think that was a good example of greenwashing, where actually nothing different is happening. Yeah. There's no new options going on the menu. There's no plant-based support. It's just literally an exercise in PR and marketing and branding. And I'd say that's what's greenwashing and wokewashing. Yeah. So we want companies to actually make changes to their processes and menus and not just say they are.
They need to, don't they? I mean, like, because people's attitudes to life in general has just changed. I think we're looking more and more living like our grandparents once did. Do you know what I mean? Like shopping thrift,
that's
buying local. Yeah, like, but more and more, like, we are kind of like going in that direction. It's sort of like something as simple as carrying a metal water bottle about and relying on yourself. And like, say, if you've got a rip in your jeans, maybe like learning how to sew and sewing up. It's like, we hit a tipping point of progress, and now we're sort of hungry for what came before. And so these big companies, if they don't get with the program, then they're going to be left behind. So it's important that they do catch up.
And again, it kind of resonates with me in terms of your perspective. I think progress does look like collaboration. Unfortunately, yes, it does mean it not necessarily outwardly endorsing, but just getting on with the fact that other people are going to jump on this bandwagon. Mm. But actually, that, you know, that just speaks to the amount of influence that people like yourselves are having. Tell us about your the next steps for Bosch and what you're up to at the moment, because you mentioned you have a plan. And
yes,
the immediate plan is to be in the pub at 3 p.m. Am I joking?
Yeah. Although I think I'm going to have a red wine.
Oh yeah.
So
I'm
trying to not drink beer.
Well, yeah. I've got some red wine. Oh, yeah. Here. I have to make sure that it's vegan though. Yeah.
You know the Blue Zones studies. So they talk about wine at 5 being okay. So maybe I'll have a little red
wine. I think
wine.
It's definitely part of the whole culture around eating, right? Yeah. It's, you know, who you eat around the table with as much as the food on the table.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the Mediterraneans have had like a really good relationship with little bits of alcohol. And I think the stress relieving impacts of half a glass of red wine or whatever, you know, are actually something that is quite intangible because you can't look at, you know, the mechanistic impacts of like what that resveratrol is doing, what the alcohol is doing to your cardiovascular system. However, there is something in it.
Yeah.
So enjoying.
You're prescribing me to have a red wine tonight.
Every now and again, man. It's fine.
Amazing.
Yeah, but in terms of like what's going on with Bosch, I think in the immediate future, we have the last 4 episodes of our TV shows coming out. ITV1, Living on the Veg. It's Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m.
And it also is repeated on Saturday.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
So that's been really, really cool. So we're seeing that out. We're working on book number 5 currently. We shot the first 7 photographs, because it's going into a blad, which is kind of like a taster for booksellers and journalists, because it's going into, I think there's the London Book Fair at the back end of February. Then Bosch Method, which we've been beavering away on for bloody ages. And it's all coming together beautifully now. We've got bucket loads of wonderful recipes in there. We've got workout plans. As Henry said before, we've got the blood thing that you're going to be doing. So that's a big thing that's in the diary. And I think we will hopefully be pushing for a bit more transatlantic kind of stuff, you know, because like our numbers in America are really good in terms of our social following and also in terms of book sales. So we might sort of push that a little bit further. Yeah, what else we got going on?
I mean, that's all of it from our perspective.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned OKRs before.
Yeah.
It's 2020, the start of 2020 now. So we've both been away over Christmas, and now we've got Natalie on board. We're thinking really carefully and really granularly about what our goals are and what we want to achieve. Mm-hmm. But at the high level, it's getting more people to eat more plants. As Ian mentioned, with the Bosch Method, helping them be healthier. Because there are too many people eating vegan junk food, and we want to help move them a little bit towards 80% colourful food and 20% naughty food. Yeah. Moving them in that direction. And hopefully, yeah, more TV, more vegan mainstream stuff, and more showing that vegans can just be two normal guys like us that aren't necessarily preachy, aren't judgmental, and like a wine in the pub from time to time. But just more of that.
But also, like, in terms of the like personal level, both Henry and I, at the start of this year, have kind of really adopted a more kind of fitness-focused approach to the way that we're going about life. So Henry's in the gym. What, like, you're doing?
Every single day.
Yeah, you're doing the, like,
gymnastics
yoga
and mobility and yoga. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I'm in my tracksuit. Yeah. My tracksuit today.
Literally living that lifestyle. Yeah.
And I'm on the like a self-imposed 365-day challenge where it's basically going to do some form of exercise every single day for 365 days. Because I suppose what we're trying to do is kind of like buy life longevity with the currency of exercise. Because I think, like, you know, like sweating every day now is the sort of thing that will give you an extra 6 years at the back end of your life, which is always a good thing.
How do you look after your mental health?
Sleep is key. Yeah. Like, lots of good sleep. I think, like, not like look, this is the benefit of having a co-founder as well, like having the opportunity to kind of split duty. But when it comes to mental health, like, I think I kind of try, you do as well, try and get some meditation in, by in like the savasana at the end of yoga, or just like chilling out in the sauna and just kind of sitting through, or even just going on a run. Do you know what I mean? Like that's quite meditative. And I'm kind of I'm taking a lot of solace in podcasts at the moment, which is a good thing to say, seeing as this is a podcast. But like in the morning, like say if you're going for a run, you stick your headphones in and you just listen, and so you just get into this kind of just like nice flow, like brain flow, body flow. You might not be doing the thing, but like it is meditative, and you come back after your run or after your exercise, and you just feel like a damn sight better than what you did before you went out. So yeah, and it's also having some kind of life discipline is really good for mental health as well. It's sort of like, I'm getting out of bed and I'm gonna get shit done, and I'm gonna go to bed and I'm gonna get some sleep done. Do you know what I mean? And everything in between.
Yeah, Ian's blessed with the ability to just sleep through anything.
Oh mate, I'll sleep through an earthquake.
There was one time that I was locked out at about 2 a.m. and I was banging on the door. His bedroom was just right by the door. Yeah. I spent half an hour screaming and banging on the door. He didn't wake up.
Yeah. Well, the other day we had a fire alarm. Didn't hear it. Really?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. Whereas I will wake up from time to time. But I'm also really cognizant of my sleep. Uh-huh. And I'm trialing this new thing called Miracle Mornings for me. There is a book around this topic. Uh-huh. And it's just making sure that every morning, up at about 5 or 5:30, before any of the day begins, I will do some stillness, so a bit of meditation. They actually have an acronym, SAVERS.
SAV. Is this the 5 a.m. class?
Life Savers. It's related. The book's called Miracle Morning, but I think they're all in the same batch.
Gotcha, yeah.
So S is for stillness, meditation, or yoga, savasana. A is for affirmation. So I just will just write something in my journal. V is for visualization, which is kind of similar to the affirmation, but you just visualize the kind of day you're going to have. E is for exercise, and I'll do either yoga or gymnastics. R is for reading, so you're 10 or 15 minutes reading. And then S is for scribing. I think he couldn't get the W into the acronym, so he did an S. So a little bit of writing.
Right.
And so the idea is that by the time we start work about 9:30, 10, I've kind of meditated, exercised, set my intention for the day, read a bit, written a bit, and my brain is all me. And I've not even really looked at my phone yet.
Yeah.
So that's how I'll deal with it. And it really levels me out and allows me to build habits, aided, I would say, by the bullet journal method, like really strict adherence to Ryder Carroll, who is the guy who wrote the bullet journal method, his method of journaling. I follow that to the T, and it just helps me control everything and track everything.
Follow it to the dot.
Exactly. Follow it to the bullet.
Exactly.
I'm definitely going to try that out. I have to read those books as well. I mean, I do my affirmations in the morning. It's a recent thing.
Because you used to do them, you used to do gratitude on Instagram.
I enjoyed them, man. I bring it back every now and then.
Okay.
Because what I found was doing the gratitude thing every single day didn't allow me to be quite honest with myself, because it was like, I'm sharing it with everyone else, so I don't want to go too personal. So, and then I realized, okay, after doing it for like 700 days straight,
it was a long time.
Yeah, it was 2 years.
Did you record all of those? Like, did you have you got the actual raw files? Because if so, You should bang that up on YouTube. That's long form content.
Every 3 seconds, yeah. A new day.
Mate, I think it's a great idea.
Like 24 hours continuous, yeah. Dr. Rupee gratitude.
Yeah. Oh God, people, yeah, really, we could feel about minutes. For you, that's for sure.
It may be on my Instagram. Mm-hmm. There are like, every time I look at like how much data my apps are using, Instagram is like right at the top.
Oh, really? Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like gigs and gigs worth of data. So it's probably in the archive somewhere, but that's a really good point. I'll look into that. I will credit you in that. Well, that's really good, like, to get some insight into how you deal with mental health, because I think the way people, particularly in the position that you guys are in, you know, process everyday life, but also process the amount of pressure it is, you know, to maintain all the socials, create a team, instill a culture within that team, and then also strategize about the future. Like, it's a lot of mental power.
Yeah.
And I think people who perhaps don't have as much responsibility can still learn a lot from those insights into how you deal with it. Guys, thank you so much for coming in. I'm going to try this myself.
Yeah, let us know. This is the big question. Is what does Rupee out of the doctor's kitchen think of
what
our food?
Well, yeah, fingers crossing
a bit more.
Yeah.
And this is your first time trying banana blossom?
Yeah, first time with banana blossom. Oh, wow. Guys. The sour tanginess of that is awesome.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Really good, yeah. It's got to be like the tamarind, like the syrups, like slightly offsets that as well. It's got my wholehearted approval.
Can you tell us anything about the health benefits?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we've obviously written it, so we know everything. Yeah.
I mean, you've got like three or four different varieties of proper veg here. You've got fiber in the green beans. I don't know much about banana blossom, I'll be honest. I've never cooked with it before, so I need to look into that. You've got novel antioxidants in the mushrooms like ergothione and a whole bunch of other B vitamins as well. Some mushrooms have vitamin D if you put them in sunlight with the gills up, but I don't think these are the ones, but either way, we need to be taking our vitamin D supplements regardless. And then you have the tomatoes that will have the lycopene spilled out of them because I cooked them for a little bit longer, so you're disrupting the cell walls and allowing the absorption of all those antioxidants.
Wow, nice. Good knowledge. But also it's delicious, warm, spicy, hearty. Yeah,
exactly.
And quite light as well in terms of the, we've toned it down in terms of the saturated fat, and it's just delicious.
Yeah, a funny dish this as well, because you know how some dishes you look at it and go, that's winter food and that's summer food.
Yes.
That bridges the gap.
You know what, that's such a good point. Because I could eat that in summer, because it's a going style dish, so it's something that I would imagine, you know, would be served on the beach somewhere, but that's perfect for like right now where it's freezing outside.
Very good.
Bosh.
I hope you agree that Henry and Ian are just two wonderful human beings who are just super chill, massively relaxed. I love the chat we had about culture within creating an organization. And I think it was definitely an honest conversation that it was definitely one of the most honest conversations that I've had with them. And I do, like I said, appreciate their mission and what they're up to. Please follow my guests at bosch.tv on Instagram, and make sure you check out their website as well, bosch.tv. You can catch their show on itv.com and their books as well, all over Amazon. You pretty much can't miss these guys. They've got a few interesting things coming out, like Bosch Method, which you can find out more about on their socials, and a whole bunch of other projects too. I just can't keep up with these guys. Make sure you give this podcast a 5-star review if you liked it. I'd love to hear your feedback and any other topics you want us to discuss. That'll be it for now. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.